Welcome to Creative Conversations. I'm Roger Humphrey. In this episode, I'm pleased to welcome the award-winning composer, conductor, Carmen Moore. His career has spanned six decades and several countries, winning awards and accolades everywhere he goes. Before we begin, please hit the like, follow, and subscribe buttons, and all of the other buttons that you happen to see down there. It's an easy thing to do, and it really does help the channel a lot. Also, leave a comment. Let me know what you think. Your opinion is very important to me. Thank you.
That's good.
And we are welcoming to the show the wonderful composer and educator, Carmen Moore. Sir, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
I have to tell you, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I wasn't unfamiliar with your work until I started researching for this, and absolutely fell in love with the music. And so if I start talking a little bit like a fanboy, well, I'm not going to apologize for it. So, I'm
a fan of the music, so I absolutely, those are my children. And
so, well, the thing that it was kind of funny. Even this morning, I was kind of tweaking a little bit, and I had your music on, and I was listening to some of it, and I was trying to, like, you know, tweak some of the questions that I wanted to ask and such, mm-hmm. and I couldn't work. I just got sucked into the music, and I just so for those of you who are listening, guess what you need to do? You need to go check this guy out. It's absolutely wonderful music.
Thank you.
And it's inventive. And I'm going to paraphrase what one of your critics said, that if every classical composer wrote like this, nobody would listen to music written by dead people. And I don't remember who it was. And I know this, it's not a direct quote, but anyway, I loved it. I thought that makes sense. I was talking to my wife about it. My wife is not a musical person. Yeah. And so when she hears me listening to some of the modern music, she just kind of turns it out. She just doesn't care for it. You know, it's very angular. And I told her, I said, you're going to like this guy.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
So you've been doing this a minute or two.
Yes, right. I actually my mother played piano, but she also had eight children. I was the oldest of them. So I got the benefit of hearing her dash to the upright piano and play something fast. she had a subscription to Etude magazine.
Which, I remember that magazine.
Yeah, they used to just publish gangs of pieces, you know. Uh-huh. They're generally fairly sweet, you know, uh-huh. items, rather than being a challenge. But at any rate, you know, she would do that, and then she'd chase some child, and then next thing I know, if any break she got, she was at the keyboard, and you know, I just. She didn't have time to teach me as such, but she taught me really well. And I felt I had paid her off, and she had paid me off when Pierre Boulez performed my Wildfires and Field Songs with the New York Philharmonic at Lincoln Center.
Wow.
And she was there, and John Lennon and Yoko Ono were in the crowd, and my friend Robert Redford was there with his wife, and you know, it's like, and there was, yeah, my mom, yeah.
Yeah, how wonderful that is. Yeah. That's just absolutely extraordinary to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I have a friend, Tigran Shiganyan, who's actually been on the show. Mm-hmm. And he's a violinist and a conductor, wonderful conductor, and is the conductor of the State Orchestra of Uzbekistan.
Uh-huh.
And And his mother is a composer. Her name is Dilaram Saitamanova. And I always get my accent wrong on that, but that's my Americanism. But he did a few years ago, he did an entire CD. He conducted and performed an entire CD of just his mother's music. And it won a bunch of awards in Europe. It was really great. So I just think that something like that, when it could come around like that, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you write, you write chamber music, you write orchestral music, as you were just indicating here. You've written dance music.
With
traditional ballet or modern?
Both. I actually was back in the day. Everything's back in the day.
I hear you there.
Gonna say.
As soon as I say when I was your age, my grandkids roll their eyes so hard they get a sore throat.
Oh, no. All right. I actually had met Lincoln Kirstein, and I was a music critic for the Village Voice.
Okay.
So I got to found myself meeting all kinds of people, W.H. Auden, and
wow.
And Auden introduced me to what did I say? Lincoln Kirstein, and he, of course, was high up was one of the inventors of the New York City Ballet.
Okay.
So they commissioned me to do a piece, but Robert Irving, who was the conductor of the orchestra, was just so incensed that anybody was bringing this young guy in to do what he had hoped he would be. And that is, composer for the ballet orchestra. So I did this piece for the ballet. It has never been heard before, but someday I'm going to pull it out and find an orchestra to play it. But then at Juilliard, my teacher and the head of the ballet of the dance department got together and thought that they should put composers and choreographers, young composers and young choreographers together.
Oh, brilliant.
And so that happened. And so I really got very much into writing for dance at that point. And years later, ended up as with Martha, what's Martha's last name? At any rate, the American Dance Festival, which met yearly and still meets yearly, and the Duke campus. I was the conductor of that and music director of that, putting composers, young composers with young choreographers, and then conducting at a certain point. I spent a lot of time with dance. And
so how is composing for dance different than, say, chamber music or orchestral, concerti or what have, symphonies?
Yeah. Well, I find it's valuable to dare to think like a choreographer.
Oh. In other words,
in a situation in which the movement of the body is one of the instruments in the ensemble.
Okay.
And so you find yourself that it might be a section in which you are
orchestral and chamber.
Yes, but to the extent that you know what roughly what the dance is going to be about, or what If they're doing a lot of leaping and jumping and whatever, you just assume that you're going to have your instrumental phrases amplify that or so it's like they become instruments in your ensemble.
So, do you work quite
Dan, I mean,
closely with
by
the.
they, I mean the dancers and the dance phrases.
I understand. Do you work
Even
really
though you
closely?
don't even know exactly what it's going to be, you just pre-assume.
So, do you work real close with the choreographers?
Generally, yeah, exactly.
So,
And with choreographers that I know what they tend to do, you
Oh,
know.
gotcha.
Yeah.
So. Now you have I've been listening to some of your music, and like I said earlier, I love it. A couple of pieces. One piece that I found on YouTube, and I'm gonna. It's from last year's village trip, I think. Aropia was. Does that sound?
Oh, wow. Yes, right. Yeah,
And
that's how
the thing that struck me, I'm a guitar guy,
Yeah.
and so anyway. The thing that really struck me was that you had like two guitars and a mandolin and another instrument. I couldn't tell from the angle exactly if it was a mandolin or the whale or exactly what it was,
Mandolin.
requinto something. But do you find it difficult to write for guitars? I mean, many composers I've spoken to just cringe.
Yeah, it well, it's hard if you are if you're fussy about things, you know. For me, it's just what a guitar sounds like, and you know how you like a guitar to sound. And you just go there, and you're going to make mistakes and get you get yourself a guitarist like Bill Anderson, your friend, to come in and ride herd. And generally, you're right. You know, it if you know what a guitar sounds like and you know how you would like your guitar in a circumstance to sound. Then you're in good shape, basically.
Gotcha. I thought it was a lovely piece, the little bit that I heard. I really, and that was another one of those. I was trying to listen to that while I was trying to work on this, and
Yeah.
I just had to stop and just listen to the music. So,
Yeah.
it's beautiful. And you have a new piece coming out. Embrace the Root. Is that correct?
Embracing the Root,
Embracing
yes.
the Root.
And that is a that's a music theater piece that I've
Oh.
been writing with a Danish vocalist, Lotte Arnsbjerg, and she's brilliant. I trust her. I have trusted her to write lyrics, and she's Danish, so
Wow.
but her English is splendid, as happens with Scandinavians.
That's true.
It's shocking what they and it's American English, and it's somehow you said, how do you know those things? I don't know that.
Christine Prin was on about a year ago,
Yeah.
and from the Rudersdal, and she's from Denmark, and it, yeah, her English was terrific. I mean, and my Danish doesn't exist, so.
Please. Mine doesn't either, and I've been going to that country constantly for years, but I didn't even try. And they understand. They understand that my not knowing. I know a few words and this and that. But at any rate, the piece, roughly speaking, is the saga of a woman who is a research scientist who starts out in the forest and then just grabs things and grabs a monkey and brings him back and takes his brain out and studies it and et cetera, et cetera. And This is done with puppets. With puppets, and then she does the singing. We've written songs that tell the story and dramatize the story and everything. And I'm at the keyboard so far, and it's quite exciting. And we'll be bringing it to the New York area in a year.
It sounds like, so is it, are you done composing or are you still in the
Yes,
process?
it's done. We actually have done as many as 16 performances
Oh, wow.
in Denmark, in
And what's the
Copenhagen.
reaction been? Audiences
Crazy.
like it?
People go, succès fou, fou. They really, really, the audiences are really big on it. So we dare to bring it to New York.
Well, congratulations on that. So, how did you get the inspiration for that piece? Where'd that idea come from?
Well, actually, she was visiting me one year, about 6 years ago, whatever. And we were out for a walk in Central Park and noticed, I mean, there's so many strange things that trees do, in their growing. But this was ridiculous. There was a root coming out of a tree, and the root was this about the same size as the tree it was a root from, and it goes over an enormous rock, and obviously he had been doing that for several years. And then at a certain point, way off to the right, you could see that it had disappeared into the ground. And what it had been doing was simply trying to find some earth. And then we started exploring trees and what's going roots and whatever, and discovered that many things. One is that the root from this tree underground. This all takes place underground also.
Okay.
Knows things about another tree. And the roots are, they're almost in conversation via a fungus that they travel in, like we travel in air. And so trees look after each other via their roots, and the roots behave like the brains of a tree. So we're just like, what the, and so some so we started writing songs and came up with a plot, and found this wonderful puppeteer, puppet master, who started making puppets for us and loved the story and loved the
Oh, cool.
et cetera, et cetera. So
I've talked to a couple of other people who have done things with puppets recently, and I thought, prior to Julie Taymor doing Lion King, I don't think that would have been acceptable. And now it's just another tool in the toolbox.
It's got to, yes, right, exactly. It's a way of getting out your idea and putting it, as it were, into the mouth of another being that doesn't re in a way doesn't exist, but very much comes to exist because the audience member accepts it
Right.
almost more than it might accept an actor.
I think you're right. And totally, suspend disbelief and just really get into it. I think it's wonderful. So,
So it's a bunch of songs. It's a music theater piece, and
gotcha. So that's theater, dance, opera. Do we have an opera in there?
yes, I actually have a children's opera
Oh, how exciting.
in the Spanish language that I did at Costa Rica in the year 2001, and that was a big hit down there. And at some point, somebody's got to translate it into English and see if they can.
Absolutely. Well, but they sing them in, already in French and in German and Italian, so why not Spanish? I mean,
Right. So this one was actually, I found a Spanish poet who wrote this. It's a story of like a forest sort of godlike creature, and we had the Costa Rican National Dance Company was part of this. So
Wow.
one of their dancers was what's this wonderful godlike creature, and then a series of animals from the Costa Rican forest came up to help out these children from two Indian tribes that were at war with each other. And so the children went to get got together, of course, because they were lost in the forest, and the animals came to help, and da 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 da. So they're off we go again. So into the forest. I guess I can't stay out of the woods.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, right. There could be.
I'm a Northern Michigan boy myself, so
Okay.
I'm more trees I got, the better I like it.
You
So,
know about that, right? I'm from Ohio originally,
what was the other thing? Oh, I know the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was technology and whether or not that's affected the way you play or compose today. Are you able to utilize that? Do you care to utilize it? Is that in the way?
Yes, I actually build my chords with the mouse, you know.
Okay.
It's like find notes and listen and whatever. So that has become like an important instrument of mine.
I know I do a lot of arranging and for my students and such, and I do the same thing. I'll stack some notes together, or I'll do an arpeggio, and then I'll go back. Okay, does this work? Does this not work? And
Yeah, but because you can listen to stuff and on right
right.
away.
And one of the nice things for me when I listen is I don't have to worry about doing it. I'm not thinking about physically creating. I can just hit the go button and sit back and listen. Artificial intelligence, I don't know if that would affect anything that you're doing. I think that they're utilizing some of it in the recording industry now, to help with some of the post-production work and things like that,
Yeah,
mixing.
sure, that would make sense, but I don't see it as helping with the logic of a piece.
Yeah, I don't think it would either, other than I'm wondering if maybe through AI, and I'm just wondering out loud right now, if they won't come up with just better sounds, just truer sounds. I hear violins
That's
and they
fine.
don't sound too bad. I hear guitars and they sound dreadful, so.
Right. I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. And what other pieces? I don't know if you got to hear Concerto for Ornette.
I was looking for it, couldn't find it. I haven't heard it yet. But yeah, I did want to ask about that. And he was a friend of yours, Ornette Coleman, we're talking about, of course.
Yes, a dear friend.
I got turned on to his music. Oh man, that was back. I still had hair. That had to be, in late 60s, early 70s, something like that. Somebody had suggested to me that I listen to him, and I bought an album, and I said, "This is back when you buy albums and listen to the entire album, and I did, and I was just blown away. I didn't understand a lot of what he was doing, but I didn't care. It was so good. It was like this is a terrible analogy, but if you remember in the 60s, there was a Japanese singer who sang the song. Anyway, it was a Japanese love song, and it became a big hit in the United States. Sukiyaki, they called it, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all in Japanese, but it was a big hit. To me, it was the same thing. I said, I had no idea what it was about, but I knew it was important. And listening to Arnett was the same idea. I didn't understand the language, but I was really like drawn in. I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, right. No, he's definitely an original, and bless him, he just stayed with it, but he wasn't caustic about it. It wasn't like it's me or the highway, you know. It's just this is what I'm hearing, and therefore off we go, you know.
Right. It's authentic.
Yes, right.
Very,
So
very authentic.
it's a three movement concerto, and that I actually had hoped that he was going to play in it, and I wrote an alto saxophone part that exists, but he was going into his dementia,
Oh,
and
I'm sorry.
at that point, bit by bit by bit by bit, and so he couldn't promise that he would even remember to come to the performance. He did come to the performance, which was by the Juilliard, New Juilliard ensemble.
So you had another saxophone play his part then,
Yes,
with him in the audience.
but the part is written into the score, and so it is played, and the other part was to be improvised. I decided, okay, I find somebody to improvise over. In other words, play what you hear
Sure.
in the spirit of Ornette Coleman. And so Ornette sat next to me at the performance at Juilliard, and he's very happy. And he was really concerned as I was composing this thing, that he was going to mess it up for me, you know. And I said, "Don't worry, we'll think of something."
So you've got a different saxophonist
Yes.
sitting in, and he's playing a piece that was written for Ornette with Ornette in the audience. That's a
I
gutsy
swear to God.
person.
That's right. He was a master's guy, Morgan Jones, who was a master's student in the Juilliard Jazz Department, and did a really, really nice job.
Oh, I bet.
I had taken him to meet Ornette a couple times and to sort of feel him out and improvise with him. It worked out great. And in the future performances, it would be somebody totally different improvising over whatever they hear.
So it's always a little different every time.
Automatically, yes, right.
That's exciting. I will say, like I said at the beginning, I'm quite unfamiliar with your work, and now I'm just totally in love, and I'm definitely doing deep dives on this stuff. And
Right. Nice.
I can't wait to get my grubby little hands on
Good. Go for it. Go for it.
it. So, well, aside from composing, and you have your group, the Sky Music Ensemble. We
Yes,
really haven't
right.
talked about that.
Yeah.
That's a chamber group,
Yeah.
about half a dozen people or so.
Yeah, about six, seven, sometimes eight. They tended to be from different walks of musical life. But I had a couple jazz masters, what's his name? Leroy Jack. Leroy. What was Leroy's last name? Jazz violinist.
So you've got jazz. So you've got jazz players and classical players in.
Absolutely, Sam Rivers. Great Saxophone master.
Now, is this
Leroy Jenkins is who I was
okay?
thinking about.
Is this kind of a set group, or is it kind of rotating players, or?
Well, they're basically the same players. I mean, Sam, I'm afraid, died, and Pramie Russell Tubbs is has become the new soprano saxophone slash flutist.
Okay. Now,
But
when you write for this group, do you write differently than you would for, I mean, aside from the fact that yes, it's chamber, but do you write differently than you would say even other chamber pieces?
pretty much. I just anticipate what this group would like to, not what they would like to play, but what they would tend to play individually, and do the math in my head, the sound, like you would do with a symphony orchestra. It's like, what would all these people add up to, and have sections, but always sections in which they would individually improvise solos, and then even sections where they improvise together after
Oh,
something
wow.
I have written builds up to a certain point, and then there's an open section for them to expand on what they had just played, written out, improvised, and then I find a way to put a cap on it at a certain point, maybe go to another section, something like that.
So, do you find that you utilize improvisation a lot, or is it just kind of in a small, only in a couple of pieces? Because we've talked about that.
Yeah, no, just only in well, it's always available, but with Sky Music Ensemble, that was expected
Ah, I
always.
see. Okay. I know that. Years ago, Philip Glass kind of put his ensemble together because he didn't think he could get his music performed otherwise. He's spoken of that in a couple of interviews. Was that kind of the idea behind this, or was this kind of a different idea?
No, it's like when I was coming up in the late 60s and early 70s in New York. I lived downtown and was going to Juilliard uptown, and had got the job as a new music critic of the Village Voice. So I was hearing everybody's everything. So it was sort of, I decided it wouldn't it be interesting to put together a group with everything in it, and then write some music for them. So it was like an opportunity to expand on an idea that was, which it just came naturally out of the New York sort of soundscape or whatever.
Gotcha.
Everybody was just like, even just walking down the street, you hear
So,
Latin music.
do they perform often? Do you have a
Yeah,
season?
we performed a lot. We were what do you call it? In residence at St. John the Divine Cathedral
Oh, great.
for several years, and so we did. We had some followers from there, and then we started traveled and performed in the old city at Switzerland. What was the old? Oh God,
Lucerne or
no, it was. No, the big city in Switzerland,
Geneva.
Geneva. Yeah, right. We performed there, and then we were performed at La Scala in
Oh,
Milan.
wow.
So I conducted in the Sky Music Ensemble there for for
how cool is that?
Choreography for a piece.
That's absolutely wonderful. So, well, Maestro, believe it or not, we're about out of time. So I'm going to...
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
I have enjoyed this so much, but and I could sit here literally and talk to you till supper time, but I'm not going to subject you to that, I promise.
I actually should mention one other piece.
Okay.
Madiba, which is...
Yes.
The form follows the life of from birth to death of Nelson Mandela,
and
for symphony orchestra, and it sort of features a cello, a solo cellist,
okay,
as the voice and the consciousness of Mandela, and. So,
well, I can direct people to your website, and additional information and connections to these pieces would be available there, I'm assuming.
Yes, right.
Okay.
So there are a certain number of pieces that would be there.
I tell people go down there at the description down below, and there will be a link in the descriptions, and
okay,
so that people can find you and then also other places. Like I said, I found you on YouTube and was just mesmerized by the music. So
that's wonderful. I have to go check that out.
Well, sir, thank you so much. I'm
Roger.
So pleased to have met you and had this conversation. I hope we can do it again. I just really have enjoyed it. So, but I'm going to say goodbye now and hope to see you again real soon. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
I'd like to thank Carmen for taking the time to talk about his music, his process, and all of his projects. If you'd like to know more about Carmen and his music, there is a link in the description below. Also, don't forget to go to www.rogerhumphrey.com and subscribe to my blog. It's a great way to get updates on all of my guests. I promise, no spam, ever. And thank you also for spending time with us. Don't forget to grab some friends and share some of your favorite episodes of Creative Conversations with Roger Humphrey.